I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track Open Link. Our topic today is how to get your accounting department to look forward. My name is Dana Barocca. I am the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. We'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we'll jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time, Lighthouse provides in-depth work style and personality assessments for both new hire candidates and for staff development. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. And if you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track Open Line series is in response to a number of calls we've been getting from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program. On your screen, you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. And at the conclusion of our program, we'll open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes, since we'll be sharing many ideas that you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. To print the slides out, you'll see an icon in the lower right-hand corner, so please feel free to print at any time. They're located on each of the slides also. Our guests with us today are Gary Garbowitz and Tom Compare. Both are with the accounting firm of RBZ. Gary is a partner with over 30 years of experience working with middle market companies and their owners to build and preserve wealth through developing various strategies for growth, managing risk, and eventually exiting the business. Gary provides the CFO skills and tools to help maintain the appropriate controls to keep his clients heading in the right direction, as well as providing the traditional tax, compliance, and accounting work. Tom has over 25 years of business experience in accounting and is a manager in the RBZ's Entrepreneurial Services Group. Prior to Tom joining RBZ, he was a CFO for companies in technology, professional services, entertainment, manufacturing, and distribution. Some of the areas that Tom enjoys includes forecasting, strategic planning, audit preparation, restructuring for middle market organizations up to $150 million, along with the other activities that you'd expect from a progressive and visionary CPA firm and financial services organization. I feel privileged to have Gary and Tom with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program, and the topic will be market planning, stay ahead or be left behind. Gary and Tom, I want to welcome both of you. With all this great experience, it's going to be a wonderful show and program.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for that wonderful introduction.
You're welcome. So you guys, why don't you take it away? We're on slide one. Why invest in being forward-looking?
Thanks, Dana, and welcome to everybody, and thank you for the opportunity to be able to share some of our experience in this area. To let you know, as we go through the slides, some of them will be a little bit more in-depth, and some will just be more kind of a general conversational. So as we go through the next six or seven slides, some will have some really beefy information, but like we're starting off with the first one is kind of an obvious one. What are we doing here, and why is it so important? Well, we all know what's going on in the economy these days, and everybody wants to know what's going on with their business and what's going on with their cash flow. And so we spend a lot of time at RBZ helping people understand their profitability and understand their cash flow, and that's really what the accounting department's there for. We're so used to dealing with our accounting departments that put the numbers in the right boxes and give the reports. But today we really have to focus on the reports and what they tell us and need to interpret those to make some very critical business decisions quickly. That we can't really sit around like we had in the past and hope things are going to change, because we need to make some decisions today. In the area of reducing risk, that's really in regards to insurance and liabilities that we can help our clients deal with any of the risk assessments, and some of it's in regards to internal controls also. Building value. Today everybody's talking about an exit strategy or thinking about an exit strategy and how to build up the EBITDA in their business. And so what we try to help them do is understand what EBITDA means to their company and how they can increase the value of their company by the business decisions that they make on an ongoing basis.
Yeah, just to emphasize that the building value part is really the long-term strategic planning. You know, the way that we work here in this trifecta of areas is the initial thrust and focus is to build profits and cash flow. That's where we, where you as a business owner can immediately increase, in the, you know, experience an increase in profitability. But long term, to translate that increase in profits to real value for your business is the long term strategic planning, and that's where you really build value and long term wealth. And it goes hand in hand with kind of estate planning. And personal financial planning.
Well, why don't we go to our next slide? That's a good segue. How to reduce risk.
No, I think the next slide, Dana, is
how to increase profit and cash flow.
There we go.
Go through. These are bullets from the first slide. So in a little bit more detail, how do you go about increasing profit and cash flow? And how does that relate to being forward-looking in your business? The first step is to, number one, make sure that your historical information is accurate and consistent. So your accounting department has to get the basics down first. And but assuming that you have those basics down, and the topic of today's conversation is how to then move your accounting department to become forward-looking, the real key is to identify the the key performance indicators that are unique to your business. And that may go beyond the traditional, you know, profit, EBITDA, how fast is my accounts receivable turning, what are my days in inventory, days in receivables, and maybe what is my quick ratio, the typical kind of ratios that you look at. And maybe what's my order backlog. You know, what's my forecast? And now we're seeing a lot of people forecasting cash flows, at least I am in my practice, for obvious reasons. But once you identify what those key performance indicators are, you need to be using the historical information to see what the trends are and then trying to project what will be happening in the future. So that historical information is very important. And then the art becomes the forecasting of what will happen in the future. And that can come from talking to your customers, talking to your vendors, seeing what they're seeing out in the field, and really knowing your business and what's important to your business. The second portion, and while you're doing that and looking at these key performance indicators, you have the opportunity to spot trends, and if you're really doing this well and doing some concise management reporting, you can, and focused on those key indicators, you can spot trends in advance of when you may have an emergency. And that's the really important thing to focus on right now, is when you're forward-looking and being anticipatory rather than reactionary, that's a very good footing to be on in today's economy. The second piece is to actually develop a cash forecasting model, which is, a basic projection. But I think to really implement it and to be effective, it has to be easy to implement and simple. So I see a lot of companies getting into a lot of detail with assumptions and different things, and these forecasts become difficult to manage. So I always advocate keeping it high level, keeping it simple, and focusing on, again, those key indicators, the big ticket items in your business, in order to have at least a good, reasonable guess of what's going to happen in your cash flow going forward. Then once you have that developed, monitor it. Make sure that your actual results are coming close to where you think they're going to be, and if they're not, make adjustments to that forecast to keep it as accurate as possible. And then the third area that we would focus on is, as far as increasing profits and cash flow, is the data that you have accumulated historically. Analyze it frequently, as frequently as possible. And this could even be weekly or daily if the indicators justify it. But if you are on top of your data and analyze it frequently, it reduces the delays in decision-making. And what we've seen in the businesses that we're looking at today is people companies have taken too long to make decisions, and in the downward spiral that we've had over the last year, that can be devastating in some circumstances. So we really try to keep our business owners focused on looking at this stuff frequently.
Historically, accountants have been the gatekeepers, and the CPAs themselves have been the gatekeepers of information from the past, and now really all of us on the accounting side and for the private company side, we really need to be focusing on our efforts, what's going on in the future. So for the work that Tom and I do, and we work a lot together on most of our middle market clients, we provide clients with the monthly financial dashboards and cash flow ratio analysis that you'll see a little bit further along. And I think all of us need to be looking ahead, knowing that we have very good, solid information behind us.
I'd like to encourage everybody, if you have questions, you have a chat area, please submit them. We just had a question come in. How do you know which key indicators, or what should be a key indicator? Any criteria for that?
Yes, it's a good question, actually. Generally, you know for your business what the key indicator is. If, for example, Dana, if you are in a delivery business and you're delivering like a limousine service, you know that one of your indicators is gasoline, intake of the gasoline mileage and how much is the cost of gas. If you're middle market, like I have a client that's in the eyewear business, so we know the cost of the frames themselves is one of our key indicators, and their gross profit margins. Some of it could be a selling cost. They spend a lot of money with salesmen and sales commissions, and so therefore that might be one of the key performance indicators.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Let's go
to slide three then.
Sure.
How to reduce risk.
How to reduce risk, right. Accurate, timely, and relevant financial information. For some reason, it's always amazing to us that many of the new clients that we work with don't have timely financial information and or, surprisingly, timely reconciliations of bank accounts, accounts receivable, accounts payable, and those are fraught with disaster, and especially today as far as cash flow, it's really very difficult to determine your cash flow if you're really not on top of your financial information. Obviously, you need to know how long it takes you to collect your money and when you're going to be able to pay your vendors. So having that information timely is critical. Internal controls.
Gary, let's back up for a second. Somebody's put a question in. How do you know if financials are accurate? It sounds like a weird question, but there's a lot of relevancy to that.
There is, and that's a really good question. And like Gary said, we see this a lot. It's amazing to me how many businesses run with really poor information, and oftentimes that comes from a series of bookkeepers that have been employed in the company over a period of time, and maybe really, have struggled with getting the right person in there, and so the information is really a mishmash. There's no consistency. The first thing that I would look at to understand how accurate your financials are is to look at the financials printed out on a month-to-month basis, so you can see variations in the revenue, gross profit, selling and general administrative expenses. If you see them as a percentage of revenue, if you see a lot of variances from month to month, you've got some issues there. Again, looking at these comparative, and even if it's a balance sheet, looking at it comparatively and looking for variances, when you see anomalies, you can tell that there's inaccuracies in your financial reporting. So that's one quick, easy way to do a sniff test and see how accurate
the financials are. And hiring the right people is really important, it sounds like.
Absolutely, and that's an area where we see many entrepreneurs go wrong in that they have training. Typically, the entrepreneur's strength is in either sales and marketing or knowing their product and service and their market very well. Typically, they don't have formalized training in accounting and limited training in operations, and so they don't know the right people to look for and the right way to structure their finance department. So that's a common pitfall.
And we're going to hit that later. But that's an area, Dana, where you can help us and our clients as far as calling out and getting us the right people so we don't be jumping from one person to the next person over the years, and it's a constant change in our accounting departments.
Good point. Another question just came in. timeliness. What is considered timely for financial information?
Well, there's a great rule of thumb, and a lot of accountants tend to be a bit myopic and try to get every detail in absolutely perfect. But there's an 80-20 rule to accounting information. Is timely information, that's something that's delivered within, say, a week of historical results, is much that's 80% accurate is much better than information that's delivered 30 days after the fact that's 100% accurate. So it is, it's an 80-20 rule, and timeliness is everything, because if you can't make timely business decisions, as we've seen over the last year, it can be devastating to the business. So timeliness is very important, because you're making business decisions based on this information. If you can't react quickly, then it puts you at a competitive disadvantage.
Okay. Thank you. That's good. Thank you for the questions that are coming. We'll try to answer all the questions we're going through. If we're running out of time, we'll do it after we open the lines up, too. Solid internal controls. You guys have any examples of that?
Sure. Well, I have one just the other day. You know, the good news and the bad news. One of my clients called, and we had a question about a vendor approval, when it turned out that we did not have a good vendor approval process in order, and it turned out someone in the marketing department had approved a vendor that was related to, that they knew back east in New York, and it turned out there was fraud. He actually was sending money to someone that was in the industry. It was someone in the advertising business that was potentially that could help our client, but really wasn't working with our client. So the marketing guys say they're advertisers in New York, and they sent them some money. And what was going on in this particular case, they were sending $10,000, and the guy back east was sending back a check for $9,500 to the guy here in L.A. And so, fortunately, with the good internal controls, and someone actually had a pretty good nose for something just didn't make sense. And quite honestly, when it comes to fraud, you just need someone to be awake and alert, and to something that looks a little funny to ask questions. And that's so, even though there were internal controls in place, without someone just saying, hey, this doesn't make a lot of sense to me, it's still very difficult to detect. So internal controls are critical, and that includes having people not, you know, the same person collecting the cash, not doing the bank reconciliations.
Yeah, okay.
The other thing with internal controls that a lot of entrepreneurs struggle with is that they're perceived to be very time-consuming and a lag on the business. And what we try to advise our clients is that you can implement a few key controls that really give you a level of protection so that you can actually implement this stuff and protect your assets. And a couple of examples of that would be, you know, the biggest control is just if people know that someone is watching what they're doing. In fact, you take the time to review or even pretend that you're reviewing something so that someone knows that someone's watching their actions. That's a great preventative control. And like Gary said, just simple things like doing bank reconciliations on a monthly basis, having the owner review those reconciliations, having the owner review monthly budget to actual financial statements. Those are things that don't take too much time and are very impactful to the business.
Why don't you guys touch briefly on the next two bullet points about regulatory and tax compliance and appropriate coverage for mitigating liability?
The tax compliance is just a fundamental. Get your tax returns and done on a timely basis, so to mitigate any penalties, late filings, and it's just to us, it's an indicator if you're not doing your financial timely and your accounting and compliance work on a timely basis, it just is a little bit of a red flag for us to saying, well, you just don't have your act together, and it's fraught with problems as time goes on. So we always tell people to do things timely and make sure they keep their compliance current.
Okay. And the last bullet point?
The last bullet point is really tough. We think of it mostly in relationship to insurance areas, and we help our clients with making sure they have the, whether it be employee liability insurance, to make sure they cover any possible issues with employees internally, or to make sure they have the proper amount of liability insurance depending on their product that they sell and the level of risk. And so a lot of times you can hedge your bet a little bit with the appropriate insurance.
Okay. In today's environment, I've been hearing from some clients that everyone's looking over the insurance issues, where it's waste, where it's not, where the risk would be. Do you guys have any thoughts on that, of where it's safe to cut back and where not to?
I work a lot in that area, Dana, and I'm not so sure it's necessarily where to cut back. It's just where to. Workers' comp is an example, to make sure you have folks classified in the right area, make sure you're not paying someone who's inside doing some office work that doing is considered doing some heavy lifting and therefore getting a higher rate. And obviously, if you have a lot of employees, you need to be focused on making sure that you're keeping the safety records correct and current and making sure that people are following the safety procedures. But all are trying to do is mitigate our risk, and so therefore we just need to dot our I's and cross our T's, and that's the best way to hedge our bet on insurance.
Okay.
But yes, I definitely recommend people talking to various insurance brokers to kind of just see what else is out there. As you all know, as of just a couple of days ago with our new health insurance, everybody's going to be looking at health insurance a lot differently. So we're going to be looking at deductibles and how much we're providing and how much we can afford and what the employee is going to be paying. And so a lot of this is, believe it or not, just common sense, Dana, and making sure that you understand what the amount of coverage you have and what you really need. A lot of folks may even be overcovered because they're a little too concerned about, you know, how much risk they have.
So pulling out the magnifying glass a couple times a year might shave costs by 3 to 5% or so, or somewhere around there, and can always help.
Yeah, definitely a couple points, absolutely.
Okay.
And by the way, in some cases it may be the same cost but greater coverage. So you may be paying the same amount for your insurance, but you might be enhancing the amount of coverage you have, and that's great value.
Okay, good point. Let's go to the next slide, on page 4.
Mm-hmm.
How to build value for planning for the future.
Yes, and this was the third bullet point on the first slide that you saw, which is, you know, building wealth. And the wealth building, this is the area that I really like to play in because I'm a very forward-looking person and like to plan for the future. And, you know, this is where we translate that profitability into long-term value. So, you know, the first step is to develop a business plan and a strategy, set goals, and then measure your progress. So this is very important because it helps businesses to be very efficient. The managers in the business can be focused on goals, and they know what the strategy is, and it creates a framework for efficient decision-making. Additionally, if you can measure progress towards your goals, you have, again, a framework for your managers to know where they're going, execute, and be moving the business forward. We see a lot of businesses tread water because they don't have a focused strategy and they don't have a way to measure progress against milestones, so they tend to kind of get stuck. Where this is important to your, you know, developing your exit or succession strategy is, you know, where are you going? There's a couple of paths that you want to consider as you're running your business. Is one, do you want to keep this as a closely held family asset that generates cash for you over a long period of time? Or two, are you looking to build a business rapidly and grow it as fast as possible and possibly take on some equity partners? Or increase your debt. And those two tracks have different kind of strategies about them. So it's really important to know which direction you're going and set up your business to do that. And this is where this really has to occur at the management or owner level and then translate down to your accounting department. Because for them to be forward-looking, they have to know where they are going as well. And then they can help you to measure the specific goals or financial measures that are relevant for where the business is heading. So, I think if nothing else, this is probably the most important point of how to get your accounting department to be forward-looking, is to work with them and your other managers to develop your strategy so that everyone is on the same page and you know where you're going. Then they can appropriately measure it and be thinking about how decisions are impacting the future, and because they're going to be seeing the impact of spending right away, and they can bubble some things to the surface that may say, hey, this is you know, something that may negatively impact us, or, hey, I see an opportunity where we can really do something good here.
Tom, there is just a question that came in. It's two lengthy questions. I'm going to try to summarize them best I can. The first one, should the accounting manager, controller, be in the business planning process with the key executives? They're not part of that process, and they think they should be. Is that correct?
If that's If that's the question, I think the answer is absolutely yes, they should be involved in the process. To me, and this comes from many years of experience working in businesses at the CFO level and controller level, my perspective on business is to be successful, you have to be executing well and have top performers in four categories. Product, your product or service is obviously essential to the success of your business. Sales and marketing, operations, and finance. So if you have a weakness in one of those areas, you're missing a component to having a successful business. You want to have a strong finance person that can participate and add value in that planning process. I get involved in business planning discussions with entrepreneurial businesses, and I help them fill in the finance portion because they have big business ideas, but if they can't actually translate what those ideas look like into actual numbers, then they may be missing something very large there. So I think it's critical to have someone that's capable in that discussion.
Oh, that's interesting. So let's say an organization has an accounting firm and they have an accounting manager, not a CFO or not a controller or maybe there's a mixture. So bringing in someone from their accounting firm to be part of the process could be helpful to bring skills that might assist.
Yes, absolutely. If they don't, and again, if they just have a bookkeeper, someone that's not at the level where they're going to really be participating strategically, then you should have someone on your team that can do that for you.
Okay. Another question that came in, business plans. Somebody wrote in, are the ones that are really thick that sit in a drawer and seem to accumulate dust, are those really worthwhile versus a one or two page business plan?
Good question. And yes, not at all. I've seen some very voluminous business plans. The key to having a successful business, in my opinion, is to be able to implement the plan. So whatever level that boils up to, I'm very much in favor of keeping things very simple. Maybe having 10 or 12 strategic objectives across the four categories of your business at one time is plenty to keep everyone busy. So keep it simple, keep people focused, have some bulleted goals against your overall strategic goals is a great way to at least start out, and you can fill in more detail as you feel necessary.
Okay, that's perfect.
Dan, I wanted to get back also briefly to the controller or accounting manager. It really depends on the size of the company. So often it's the CFO that's really involved with the strategy, and then many times there'll be the controller. Depending on the size of the company, the controller may be the main person, and then he or she would be the person involved with that strategy.
Okay.
Quite often with a lot of our clients, that's what they look to us for, because the clients that are in the $50 million, maybe the $20 million to $100 million range may not have a CFO, nor do they can they afford to pay that kind of price to bring in a full-time CFO. So we help fill that gap and help them on the strategy side, and or there are other interim CFO types that come in, but it kind of helps have someone from the outside to look and see what's going on and provide some, independent view as to what's happening with the company and strategy.
That's a good point. That's a great idea, Gary. Thank you. Let's go to the next slide.
Yeah, I want to say one thing lastly on this tax planning.
Sure.
When I look at this bullet point, it makes me think of tax credits. And those of you who are sitting there, depending on where you're working, there's just want to make sure that you're familiar with enterprise zones and something called the WOTC credit, the Work Opportunity Tax Credit. And there's R&D, research and development credits. And so just the part of the strategy is if there's tax credits out there, make sure that you can take advantage of them.
And that's something that the organizations can check with their CPA firms on and should be bringing up about tax credits?
Absolutely. Something like the enterprise zone is really a function of where your office is located. We have a client that's downtown in the produce business, and they haven't paid California tax, the 9.3% tax, for probably 10 years because they are in the enterprise zone and their employees live and work in that zone. So there's some very significant tax credits that are available for us to take advantage of.
So if someone's coming up, let's say their lease is coming in the next 12 or 24 months, these are things that should be a discussion point with the accounting firms in order to identify possible tax savings.
Well, that is a great question, and it's actually something that we do consider, but we, Tom and I, always talk about what's the best business strategy first, and then we talk about taxes second, Dana. So
okay. We
don't let the tax dog wait, you know, move the business decision. So I actually have a client now, right now, that has a significant amount of tax credits, and they're thinking about changing locations, and they know if they change locations, they're going to move, they're going to lose those credits because they don't carry over to a non-zone credit area. But they think it's a better business decision, so they're willing to make that sacrifice.
Okay. Let's go to the next slide.
Yes.
Slide 5, what are the barriers to execution?
Well, actually, if you look at the second bullet point, that to me kind of says it all, that owners are focused on the product and marketing and not trained in finance and operations. And so quite often when we're talking to people in the finance department, they just don't have the skill set necessary to kind of look forward in their business. Many of them can do the accounting and the bank reconciliation, but there's no leadership often as to what to do with that financial information. And a lot of times that has a lot to do with what you do, Dana, for a living, as far as helping people find the right quality accounting person or CFO. And so there's what I see so often in the business is that they kind of hire and they do the best they can to hire, but on top of it, they don't monitor the people that they have in their organization. So Joe or Sally might be there for, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 years and really haven't been given the guidance nor the proper expectations of what they want them to perform at their job. And so, yes, they're doing the bank reconciliations, and yes, they're providing them monthly financial statements, but they really need to go beyond that today and help the company have the metrics in order to make good financial decisions.
Okay. All right. Anything else on that page?
I think Gary hit it, you know, most of the points here. Not only do the owners not either have the time or experience to really pay attention as much as the business warrants to the finance function, but it's just, you know, it depends on what stage the business is. It's just very hard for entrepreneurial companies to staff the accounting function properly, like a mature organization would that has a true CFO, a true controller, a true accounting manager, and then clerical people. Those are all different skill sets and different levels of expertise. And in an entrepreneurial organization, you really only have the budget for, you know, one or two people in there. And typically it's a bookkeeper and a clerk. Maybe it's a controller. But there's still some gaps there on what a fully functioning finance department would be. And so that's where if the business owners can find the resources, having some outside assistance to come in on a temp basis to fill those gaps is a good solution.
Let's go to the next slide, on slide 6 then, the right staffing mix.
Yeah.
You've been covering that.
So these are some ways that I've used with my clients to help them fill these gaps efficiently. And so these are some of the strategies that I've used that have been effective in some of my clients. And one is allocate some of your finance budget to hiring someone with CFO capabilities. So that could be either an outside, there are organizations that have executives that do this on a part-time basis, part-time for the company, full-time for them. They're consultants that do this. Your CPA perhaps has operational experience or enough business experience to give you the insight and strategic guidance that you may need at that CFO level. But I think it's very important to have someone with that high-level experience giving you some insight and some strategy on how to properly staff your business based on your organizational needs. And those vary based on how much revenue you're generating, how transaction heavy the accounting process is. There's some businesses that have very few transactions. There's some that have many, many, and they're more complex. So there's each one is a different situation and could require some different staffing needs.
Okay.
So like I said, the oversight part of it is critical, and Gary and I are big advocates of having, you know, someone outside taking a look at things from just the internal control, kick the tires, outside perspective type of a situation. And then another way that you can create room in your finance budget is by, you know, pushing down repetitive clerical tasks as much as you can. And you may have some operating, you know, staff that are doing some other operating functions like a receptionist or someone else that can do some of these clerical tasks where you don't have to be paying a bookkeeper at that rate to do some very mundane clerical tasks. So push down as much as possible to lower paid staff will help help stretch your finance budget.
By the way, this I just want to make a point here because I know there's a lot of accounting managers and controllers and CFOs listening. A lot of this is not brain surgery, so it's not like I know some of this actually sounds a little self-serving to what Tom and I do for a living, but the truth is it's, most of the time we just teach the accounting department some of the easy metrics and financial dashboards, which you're going to see in a minute or so, how to set it up, and really they're on their own, so there might be a little work for RBZ or the work that we do, but for the most part it's just a training function, and we find some really very competent people that are actually excited about being a part of the overall game plan and strategy of the company, and to really provide them the metrics. It's just someone needs to provide them the leadership as to how to prepare that information. And by the way, there have been plenty of opportunities where the owner's been very excited. There's lots of times when Tom and I set up financial dashboards, and I've always thought this for all these years, but I'm finding it even more true today, is that the financial statements, and I can't tell you the reason why, but they are Latin for most of our clients, and the financial dashboards are English. It's just amazing how they just, the light comes on as soon as someone sees a graph or some illustration as to what's going on with the metrics of their business. They say, oh, okay, now I understand what's going on with my cash flows, or now I can understand what's going on with my inventory. And it's just those pictures just click in. And maybe it's just the entrepreneurial mindset. It's just easier for entrepreneurs to kind of look at the financial graphs and metrics to make some business decisions.
We'll start, and we'll show those in just a
minute. Yeah, we can go to the...
Let's go to the next slide, then, slide 7.
And 7 is just a little bit what we were talking about, and that is... We're all kind of evaluating what's going on with our business and if we're going to be successful and how to maintain. Even though we hear that the economy is getting better and people are starting to feel that the recession is, we're coming out of the recession, we don't see it that much here in California. So it's very important, whether there is a recession or the times are good, to really be have that information handy to you today and to put some kind of process in so you're developing the financial metrics and dashboards that you can make some of those decisions. And so that can be, like it says here in the bullet point number 2, look for someone that can be on your board of advisors, because a lot of times they're either a board of director or a board of advisors, your CPA, or hire an outsourced CFO to kind of help you for a few hours a month make some of these critical decisions. Once you kind of get clued into all this, you'll see how helpful and how easy a lot of this can be done.
Or maybe just a couple of new ideas can tweak something, and all of a sudden it becomes very rich, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
All right, let's jump into some of the graphs, then, that you've prepared here. And one of the things also, as we're going through this, maybe you could talk a little bit about the kind of software you guys might suggest or know of any kind of software to develop these kind of reports.
Yep, I can. It's called Excel.
Okay.
Not to be glib, but, you know, everyone has it. Everyone knows how to use it, or at least a lot of people do. So it's ubiquitous. It's very powerful. And, you know, we've generated a lot of templates that we pass on to our clients, and so it's very easy to manage. And one quick note, you know, on Excel, people often think that there's some magic budgeting package out there that will take care of all this stuff. Well, there are some, but I don't see them widely implemented. I've been doing this for over 20 years, and I've used Excel my whole career and still haven't found a better solution. And I recently went to a continuing education course on budgeting and forecasting, which is filled with about 100 people from the L.A. area, business, mostly controllers and CFOs, but some CPAs as well. And the classes polled on what software they use for budgeting, and about 97% of the folks use Excel. And these are people in big Fortune 500 companies. So it is ubiquitous. This is what pretty much everyone uses.
Interesting. That's helpful. Okay.
Yeah.
Why don't we take a few minutes per slide here so everyone can get a feel for these.
So these are just, you know, samples of what can be included in a dashboard. Our dashboards are actually much larger. There's, you know, 6, 8, 10 different slides for each category. But this will just give you a little flavor of what they look like and how they can quickly convey the financial information to the client. So the first slide, the financial highlights, hits kind of the key metrics on the business, and this is an example of, you know, key performance indicators or the main things that you want to look at your business. And I'm always an advocate of taking a high level view. But just revenue, net income, total assets, equity, and EBITDA in your business, and looking at that over a time frame, and like I said earlier, and how do you determine if your financial statements are accurate? Well, the best way to do that is look at historical comparisons and look for anomalies. And here's an example of doing that. You can see you've got kind of a nice trend of revenue growth over time, and that's correlating to your net income and EBITDA. Actually, your EBITDA is shrinking a little bit, so this particular company, even though they're growing the top line revenue, they're really not moving the EBITDA number too much. And so, you know, that would cause, you know, give the CEO, you know, insight to say, hey, why isn't that moving and what can we do to fix it? Second one is net income percentage, but it's the company's net income compared to the industry average. And as you can see, in the earlier years, 2004 and 2005, they were easily exceeding the industry average on their net income. But then something has happened to the business over the last few years where that performance hasn't been replicated. And so, again, this is an example of a analytical that would, you know, cause people to say, hey, what's going on here?
I wanted to add to that, depending on what industry some of you folks are in, but some of the, for example, in the eyewear industry I was mentioning earlier, they have just wonderful industry knowledge and analytics. So it's really great. So we're able to match ourselves up to the industry and see how we're doing comparably to very solid information. So sometimes it's a little harder to gather industry averages and to understand if it's comparable. So you just need to be cognizant of the fact that what you're comparing, if it's apples to apples. So a lot of times we'll be stuck with just our own internal metrics because we can't get a hold of something that outside companies that are comparable to our company.
I guess the slide just got advanced to slide 9. So.
Just one final point on this one before we move forward is, you know, this is looking at historical information, but, you know, bringing it back around to the point of how to become forward-looking. This, as I said earlier, the accurate historical information and having that analytical look at your business will help create the forward-looking thinking. How do we fix this problem? How do we become better at that? How do we meet our objectives? And so that's kind of the point behind looking at these historical analyticals.
Perfect. So you guys want to jump ahead to the
cash flow?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just one point real quickly on that is what you're looking at, the financial dashboards and the cash flows, is really the world that Tom and I live in every day. These are the documents that we work with every day and talk to business owners about every day and train the accounting managers and controllers to provide this, and obviously much more extensive. This is just kind of to give you some flavor of the kind of the analytics that we use.
So for everybody looking at this, we have the simple cash flow example of analytical reporting 2009, which is on slide 12. Now, if you'd like to enlarge it so you can see the micro print there, just press on it, and it will become... It will grow.
Nice.
There you go. Okay, so when you guys want to move on to the next slide, what we'll do is just minimize, and then we go on to the next one.
Okay.
Okay, so just a little bit about this. And again, now we're getting to a point of we've got a tool here that will enable your accounting personnel to start thinking forward-looking because we're able to put numbers in a box going forward. And again, in the interest of simplicity, I've really... In working with clients over the years and doing a lot of different types of cash flow forecasting, the models tend to be very complex, what a lot of people have seen. So I've tried to make this as streamlined as possible so that the controllers or bookkeepers can actually use it and people can understand it. And we don't present a balance sheet here, but basically what we do is we take the basic financial information, your revenue, gross profit, selling and general administrative expenses, and we bring that down, and then we back out and we also identify kind of the non-operating and non-cash portions of your financial statement, which is interest and depreciation, and lay all those out on a table. And then below that, we have a cash flow reconciliation. So we take the things that impact your cash that aren't necessarily shown on this on the P&L. And that would be, what are your capital expenditures or that CapEx line? Those are, you know, whether you're buying in fixed assets over the period of time. And then we're backing out depreciation from your expenses because that's not truly a cash expense. Then you may have some fluctuations in your inventory and receivables and accounts payable. So all those factors are taken into account. So as we head down to the bottom line here, we have a net cash flow from operations. So that really shows your operating cash flow once all these other factors are taken into consideration. And that's usually the missing component that most entrepreneurs don't see or can't easily glean from the traditional balance sheet and cash flow statements that they see from either their accountants or their accounting system. So this is kind of my one-sheet executive summary, simple forecasting tool that a lot of clients of mine have implemented. And it really seems to help the owners understand where their cash is going.
That's really great.
And interesting enough, if you take a look at the top section there where it shows the cash flow projection, the illustration shows the gross profit is fairly consistent throughout the years. It drops a little bit, I mean, throughout the month. It looks in 09, but the EBITDA tends to move all over the earnings before interest and taxes and depreciation. And so, therefore, it tells you that you need to look someplace else. It seems like your margins are solid, your purchase price is fairly consistent, and your sales price is fairly consistent. So it tells us that maybe there's another place for us to start looking for where are some of our expenses. And generally, entrepreneurs know, well, we went to a trade show, and that cost us X amount of dollars, so we knew that that was going to take place. But this is all about just asking the questions. And then if you get the answer that makes sense, you move forward. But if not, then you go further into your analytics. So we can move on here, Dana.
You still there, Dana?
Okay, got the 2010 up, and you can just click on that, all large.
Okay, we lost you there for a second.
There we go, back.
We're on the
2010 one, slide 13.
Okay, so now we're on to the next... The final?
I think, yeah, we'll move on to the conclusion page here.
Okay.
Unless anyone has any questions.
Let me get that one sec. There we go. Okay. You got it.
Okay. Let me get it myself here.
Alrighty.
Okay. So basically, we're on the focus. This is on the conclusion section, and then that is to really... Know where you're going. You know, we talked a little bit about exit strategies, and it's not that everybody is getting this business ready to sell in 2 years or 5 years, but you do need to understand what the game plan is. One of the things that Tom and I find consistently is that entrepreneurs are just so creative and so bright that oftentimes they make decisions without really understanding the impact of those decisions. They decide that they want to sell their product all over the world. So what's the impact of that decision? And how are we going to afford to be able to do that? What's the financing requirements? So you really need to kind of understand where you're going with your company, what your goal is. And by the way, I would say in all the years I've been doing this, I'd say 80% of the clients that I meet and talk to really don't have a sense of what the end strategy is. So are they going to pass it on to their children? Or are they going to pass it on to the employees that are in the company that have been there for years? Or do they plan to sell it? Most of them just... are kind of working day by day saying, I'm not really sure what the end game is. And that's, you know, that in itself is a decision, and they can do that. But generally, it's easier for everybody to kind of have an eye on a target and work their way towards that goal. Again, as we talked throughout the whole seminar here, is that to identify what your key performance indicators are and look at them frequently. Make sure you look at them, that you discuss them. I mean, if you're going to have a meeting once a month, you need to be sitting there and talking about these financial metrics, so just so there's a general understanding. And quite often when Tom and I do this on a monthly basis, there's always one of these or two of these or three of these KPIs that pop out to us that say, okay, here's something we need to talk about. Oftentimes it's an inventory issue, by the way, and the inventory is up or down considerably more than expected, or the margins are down, so it just gives the owners some place to say, okay, maybe we can make some better decisions.
And inventory can also be translated over if it's a service company with hours.
Absolutely. Thank you, Dana.
Okay. And so it's really important, I would say, from our discussion today, is to make sure that whether accounting manager, controller, whatever the title is, have a seat at the table when doing planning and also it's very important to do planning for your department.
Again, I agree with you. It just depends on what level and what size of the company. So, again, if it's a very small company and they're under $10 million, for example, then it might be just the accounting manager or a bookkeeper, and not always are those people included in the planning stages.
Gotcha, gotcha. Okay. All righty. Any other thoughts, Tom?
No, I think, you know, we've Gary's hit on, you know, the big bullet points and the takeaways that we want to have here. Again, you know, focus on strategy, develop long-term and short-term forecasts and goals. You know, those are really important things to do, and you know, develop some simple tools. Again, I think my mantra is keep things simple so that they can be implemented and executed upon. Don't get too tied down in the detail that you don't move forward. And that's where I see a lot of companies trying to make things too complex and go into too much analysis, and then they don't move forward. So I always try to keep things simple and implementable and moving forward, and I think that companies will, if they adopt those policies and start thinking this way, will make progress towards you know, getting to be more forward-looking.
That does make very sound advice. Gary?
We also train people here internally at RBZ, Dana, to be comfortable to take a chance and to make a statement, but to ask questions and to say, I don't know, and to really, they're very much involved with the process. So if someone's starting here in their first year accountant, they're very much involved with the whole process from beginning to end. And so they're very comfortable to say, to make a mistake and to ask questions and to really understand what they're doing. And I always say, just say, I don't know, 100 times until you know, then I expect that you would understand it. So really to make everybody a part of the team, and like I said earlier, this is not that difficult. It's just really critical financial information to help your company.
That's a good point. It's getting everybody to be part of the team and getting the right people in the seat and making sure everybody feels important and has contribution to it. In just a few minutes after we conclude this show and turn off the recording equipment, we're going to open up the line so you'll have an opportunity to talk with Gary and Tom. You'll see on your screen an area to register for our upcoming December 10th program, which is entitled Market Planning, Stay Ahead or Be Left Behind. Please sign up today and reserve a space for yourself and let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you'll receive a recording and slides for today's program. Please feel free to share it with others in your organization or within your association. Gary and Tom, I want to thank you for your time today and for all the valuable ideas that you shared. If you'd like to contact Gary or Tom to have further discussion on specifics about your industry, your team, or to have some one-to-one time together or to discuss any of the ideas shared today, you'll see the contact information on your screen. The information shared today is a property of Lighthouse Consulting Services, LLC, located in Santa Monica, California. Our mission statement is to bring effective insight to your organization. If you'd like more information on our services, please write me at dana@lighthouseconsulting.com. If you have other topics you'd like us to address, please let us know. Thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to having you join us for our next Keeping on Track Open Line program. Have a great day. Everyone hold on. We'll open the lineup in just one second.